Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Mukham tad api dhyaya. Sankha gridra vatayar vata. Sayish yase hatas tatra. Bhavita sharanam shunam. Mukham tad api dhyaya. Kankagridhra vatayar vrata. Sayishya se hatas tatra. Bhavita sharanam shunam. Thank you. Kanta gridra vatayar vritaha. Kanta gridra vatayar vritaha. Mukham tad api dhyaya. Kanka gridha vratayar vritaha. Jayish yase hatas tatra. Ladies. Mukham tad api dhyaya. Kanka gridra vritaya vritaha. Jagish yase. Bhavita sharanam shunam. Mukham tad api dhyaya. Kanka gridra vritayar vritaha. Shayish yase hatas tatra. Bhavita sharanam shunam. Mukham tad api dhyaya. Kanka gridra vritayar vritaha. Shayish yase hatas tatra. Bhavita sharanam shalam. Mukham. Face. Tat. That. Api dhyaya. Being covered. Agya. Oh, ignorant man. Kanka. By herons. Gridra. Vultures, vatai, and vata birds. Vritaha, surrounded. Shayish yase, you will lie. Hataha, killed. Tatra, thereupon. Bhavita, you will become. Sharanam, shelter. Shunam, for dogs. Chivalrous talk. Krishna said, When you lie dead, O fool, your face covered by vultures, herons, and vertebrates, you will become the shelter of dogs. Purport. Pondraka foolishly told the Supreme Lord to come to him for shelter. But here, Lord Krishna tells him, you are not my shelter, but rather you will become the shelter of dogs when they happily feast on your dead body. Srila Prabhupada vividly describes this scene as follows. Lord Krishna told Pondraka, when I shall destroy you, foolish king, you will have to conceal your face in disgrace. And when your head is severed from your body by my disc, you will be surrounded by meat-eating birds like vultures, hawks, and eagles at that time. Instead of becoming my shelter as you have demanded, you will be subjected to the mercy of these low-born birds. At that time, your body will be thrown to the dogs, who will eat it with great pleasure. Any questions? Welcome to Alachua. What a wonderful verse for a wedding, huh? In the previous verses, twice, Shukadeva Goswami mentions that a messenger was sent, and our Acharya's comment, the reason that Shukadeva Goswami repeated it twice was he was astonished at the foolishness, like a child thinking that he's God and foolishly challenging Krishna. Foolishly, he was challenging Krishna to relinquish the symbols of Vishnu, throw them down, and surrender to me. So, very astonishing. So the person that Krishna is speaking to is the messenger. And so he's speaking to the messenger, please carry the following message, O messenger, to Pondraka. And Pondraka was thinking in this way, in part because of his pride, but also in part because of the foolish people who were telling him, yes, you know, the supporters, the gang, you're God. And so, yes. Independently, he was already thinking like that, but it just became stronger because others were pumping him up a little bit. So, pride is very dangerous in spiritual life. Pride is it's natural when there's two things. We'll just do the an equation. The fruits of pious activity plus a heart that's impure equals pride. So like those who are of a demoniac mentality, the something that they're proud of is commonly the fruits of some previous activity, some previous piety, or Prabhupada would call it sometimes high-grade activity, like austerity. There's a nice section, just a little more, the anatomy of demoniac mentality, asura bhav, is revealed by the demigods when they approach Lord Brahma about the condition the universe was in because of Hiranyakashipu's austerities. From the body, specifically even from the head of Hiranyakashipu, was coming a flame that was more brilliant than the fire of the sun. And one can only imagine the intensity of his austerity. And austerity has this effect that one becomes powerful through austerity. So in devotional life, we observe our basic austerities so that we have bala, spiritual strength to carry out a life of devotion to Krishna. And we pray to him, there he is, Balaram, for spiritual strength. And again, austerity helps give spiritual strength. I remember one of the favorite parts of that topmost yoga recording, Srila Prabhupada in Los Angeles, where devotees were reading from the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and then Prabhupada would interrupt and then elaborate on something, and then they would continue, and like that, the whole of the sixth chapter. So one little section, this is I heard when I was a brahmachari, so it kind of went in, where Prabhupada was being asked, he was expanding on the point of determination, and increasing one's determination comes from voluntarily accepting austerity. It increases determination. So all Vaishnavas, brahmacharis in particular, but all Vaishnavas should observe austerities, prescribed kind of austerities, not artificial ones. They're identified. On auspicious days, like appearance days of Lord Vishnu, or Anakadasi days, or during Kartik month, some particular vrata, something that's a bit of an austerity, not too much, but something doable and sustainable. One can do something extreme, without disturbing our devotional service, for the purpose of gaining spiritual strength and increasing the purification that allows us to serve Krishna with greater sense of purpose and focus, and not being deviated by anything because the heart has become cleansed. So as devotees do, demons may also do. Hiranyakashipu was doing this great austerity, so the heat generated from his head, the fire, was so intense. The whole universe was getting hot, unbearably hot, more than Florida in the summer. It was unbearably hot. And so the demigods together, collectively, went to Lord Brahma and appealed, you know, do something. And then they described, similar to Pondraka, they described his sankalpa. Sankalpa is a nice word. We use it in our japa retreats. But, you know, the term is universal. The intention behind whatever you do. What's the purpose? Like we're discussing the program yesterday evening. What's the purpose of life? Commonly, Prabhupada would say, people don't know the purpose of life. or the means to achieve it. And so it's misdirected civilization. But when there's a purpose, then it helps you focus. What's the goal? And even with the goal, a strong focus, sankalpa. So Hiranyakashipu, they disclosed to Lord Brahma, his sankalpa is he wants your post. Like he wants to bump you off. And if he can't bump you off, he's prepared to continue with this austerity until the next creation. Then he can become Brahma in the next creation. Because what he wants is, you know, this is the baseline or foundation of asuric mentality is denying the existence of Vishnu, one who is supreme. So that he looks at Brahma and said, well, they say, the demigods say, you got this post of Brahma because you underwent great austerities. So he put 2 + 2 and got 85. I'll also do austerities that surpass that of Brahma, and then I'll become Brahma, eligible to become Brahma, and then I also want an eternal body, so I'll be Brahma forever, and then I want all mystic powers, because that's what I want, that's what Vishnu has, he's Yogeshwara, master of all mystic powers. And I want all the demigods, all the controlling personalities to offer their respects to me. And I want to control time. He had really high ambitions, this man. So the foundation, again, is atheism, asura. And from that, there's little asuras, there's medium asuras, and there's big asuras. But asuric mentality is that one. Godlessness. The Srimad Bhagavatam, Janata Agha Viplava, the verse that Prabhupada quotes at the beginning of in his preface of all of his Bhagavatam volumes. This Bhagavatam is meant to create a revolution in the lives of the godless civilization who are victims of this age of Kali. That's the purpose. So here's Pondraka, and then there's, you know, little Pondrakas or little Hiranyakashipus, the persons who are of asuric mentality. You know, it's the numbers are great and the varieties are like a bouquet. But, you know, chief amongst them, we just following our spiritual master, founder Acharya, you know, the scientists and the impersonalists, they're fundamentally atheists. It's, you know, there's different varieties. Something that Prabhupada said was that although there's different versions that may be present today, it's just a repackaging of something that's very traditional. The 6 atheistic traditions, when they look at the Vedas, of course, there's those that reject the Vedas, but then there's those that accept the Vedas and come to an atheistic conclusion. Fundamentally atheistic conclusion with different variations on the theme. Asuric. Again, the third time, the foundation is this fundamental opposition to the existence of a supreme. So if there's nobody in that position, I covet the position. Raga dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata. Very simply put by Krishna. Raga, material kind of fascination for the position of being the enjoyer, and dvesha towards he was actually the enjoyer. Exactly what Pondraka is doing. So he's challenging Krishna. And in a chivalrous statement, Krishna is saying, you've asked to the messenger, your master or Pondraka has asked that I throw away my symbols of Vishnu and take shelter of him. He becomes my shelter. Well, that fool is thinking that his body is himself, the fundamental illusion. Well, tell your master, this body is going to be cut to pieces by my Sudarshan Chakra. It will then be picked apart by vultures. And in the commentary, explains something about these Vata birds. Vata birds are carnivorous. They have long beaks and they enjoy their heron looking like, but not just the, you know, the peaceful ones that are out in the fields. They're carnivorous. Long beaks that relish meat, and then whatever is left, throw it to the dogs. This body that you're thinking will be my shelter. Tell your master that. So aside from the chivalrous, just go a little bit into the philosophical side. Apologies if you don't like philosophy, but I've been studying, preparing for Tattva Sandarbha seminar, and I'm a Jiva Goswami fan, so I really like how he presents things. The first section of Tattva Sandarbha is Pramana. The second one is Prameya. Pramana is means of valid knowledge. And Prameya is the knowledge, that which is known through the Pramana. Really simple. And then in the Prameya section, he goes through different presentations. And one of those presentations is the 10 subject matters in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Those of you familiar, second canto, chapter 10, the first verse describes the 10 subject matters. And Jiva Goswami takes some time and he goes through and says the 9 are actually embellishments of number 10. And number 10 is shelter, ashraya. And so the Bhagavatam, the 10 subjects of the Bhagavatam, is really describing Bhagavan. Same thing as he said in the first section, and then he goes up, and when he ends that, he goes into Bhagavad Sandarbha. Right after Tattva Sandarbha is, what is the Bhagavatam revealing? Bhagavan. It's Bhagavat Purana. He's revealing Bhagavan. And so what is Bhagavan? Without going into Bhagavad Sandarbha, just this little section. After the 10 subjects, they are actually one subject, 9 subjects illuminating or expanding on the shelter. He then goes into the final section of Prameya, which directly relates to what Krishna is saying to Pondraka. There's different Purushas, Adiatmaka Purusha, Adidaivaka Purusha, Adipautaka Purusha. And Krishna is the shelter of those three. So it's an elaborate description. But those three, because he's thinking, Pondraka is thinking, his body is him. And this body should be, you should accept it as your shelter. And he's just like, you know, trashing that idea big time. The body is not the self, and nor is it shelter. Krishna is saying it in another way. Jiva Goswami is saying it another way. Because the audience that Jiva Goswami is addressing is not Pondraka. It's people who accept that, he says in the beginning, his audience, he's speaking to those that accept Krishna as the goal of life. They're all in all. And there are different people that have different ideas of who is Krishna. We learn that as we go on in devotional service. So Krishna is the shelter of these three Purushas. And it's detailed, But the body is the shelter of the soul. Without the body, what's the meaning of the soul? The soul can't do anything without the body. It's not just like having a ghost body, it's having no body. So the Adi Bhautika Purusha and the Adi Atmaka Purusha, they're interdependent. But those two can't do anything without the Adi Daivaka Purusha, the demigods. But the demigods can't do anything without the supreme shelter. Souls can't, bodies can't, and the devas can't. So he's the shelter of those who give shelter, which is what Krishna is saying. You're thinking the body is the self, and the body should become my shelter. I'll tell you what. This is what I think of your body being the shelter. It's perishable. Antavattu palam tesham. There's that which is imperishable. He who is actually the shelter of all shelters doesn't come into being like bodies do and will never die like bodies do. And because you're an asura and you're challenging in this way, your body will depart from you in a very unpleasant manner. Not that any of them are really pleasant, but you know, an especially unpleasant manner. This is what I think of your claim that I am your shelter. I should accept that. So the challenging spirit goes along with godlessness. The degree to which one wishes to challenge the supremacy of God is different. When back to Hiranyakashipu, the demigods said to Lord Brahma, what he wishes to do is just to reverse the natural order of things. We're responsible to Lord Vishnu to maintain the natural order of things. He wants to reverse the natural order of things. That which is temporary to be eternal. That which is eternal to not be eternal, to be temporary. It's quite crazy. It's quite irrational. And it's certainly not possible. But those who believe that there's no God, it's certainly possible. Not only is possible, they're very determined. The determination of the atheist is very strong. Look what atheistic society is doing. Their determination is very strong. One of the heroes of determination is Jarasandha. How many times did he get totally defeated? And he came back again and back again and back again and back again. Bigger army, back again, very determined. In the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there's this description. Krishna is describing the kind of determination that a yogi needs to be successful. Chapter 6, text 24. We discussed it yesterday evening. It's based upon faith. Faith in the process, faith in the goal. Sadhana and sadhya, faith. An atheist also has faith. Everyone has faith. We have faith in something. Doesn't Krishna say that? Arjuna asked, if people don't have faith in you, won't they have faith in something? In other words, is not faith intrinsic to the soul? And the answer is yes, according to the modes of nature. We're all going to have faith. Where do we repose it? And if one is an asura, it's reversing the natural order of things. And if one is a big asura, it's big time reversal. And it's whether it's small time or big time, it's foolish. But big time, those who have undergone great austerities like Hiranyakashipu did, and doesn't give the detail, but how Pondraka got this notion that he's so powerful he can defeat anybody, everybody, and so forth, must have been some austerities. But that's Duskriti, not Sukriti. Something that gives kriti. And then how do you use it? It's like win the lottery. Or at the end of class, we're going to give everybody $1 million. Isn't that nice? Just, you know, someone standing at the door to give you $1 million. Now, how will you use that? Human form of life is such a valuable thing, specifically. And even, you know, the wisdom of the Vedas, such a valuable thing. The guidebook, how to use this human form of life to achieve perfection. Those that are Duskritis will see it in a different way. So fundamentally, the regard towards the Supreme needs to be changed, and that's essentially what bhakti is. When Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes very succinctly, bhakti is simply the desire to serve Krishna. And that's the seed. That's the bhakti lata bij. We're serving, because constitutionally we're servants. When one receives the association of devotees, then the desire to serve Krishna awakens. And when that desire to serve Krishna is nurtured or fanned, the little spark is fanned by the hearing and chanting and sadhu sangha, then it can grow and do so many things. And one of the things it does is it eradicates avidya, or ignorance, accepting the impermanent to be permanent, and so forth. The root cause of suffering is ignorance. Ignorance is eradicated by bhakti. It's like turn on the light and darkness is dispelled. Very simple. But supposing one doesn't turn on the light, supposing one doesn't contact bhakti or say yes when the opportunity arises, instead of they say no, like Pondraka and others. They're going to have some faith in something. They're going to have some determination that's driven by that faith in something and create a demoniac civilization, which we all have some familiarity with. And so what to do? The propagation of Bhagavad Dharma, that's what Prabhupada decided to do, or he was instructed to do. The chanting of the holy name, and introduce the message of Shuddha Sattva to a society infested with tamas and rajas on the order of the previous acharyas to do so. That's our mission. Looks like mission impossible. But if by the grace of Krishna he so desires this, he can make it possible, and then so that's the descending mercy that makes it possible. It's not our effort or our gift or our own little strength or something. It's descending mercy that makes it possible. So, last, Krishna is giving his mercy to Pondraka. He says he's going to, and he does. At the end, Pondraka, because he was fixing his mind on Krishna, he achieved liberation. Like Shishupal. No, his attitude was quite bad. But Krishna gave him his mercy, relieved him of that sinfulness and the ill disposition towards Krishna. And the king of Kashi too. And the son of the king of Kashi. Which is coming up in the rest of the chapter. So Krishna is very kind. If somehow we can become attached to Krishna, everything auspicious will awaken in our lives. And as instruments of our founder Acharya and the previous Acharyas, we should try to assist in our Tukarpa capacity together. I'll end. Any comments or questions? Yes.
I would like to know, in our lives, is pride ever necessary?
Is pride ever necessary? The only thing, we have many learned personalities in the assembly, so someone else can answer this in addition, if you like. The only reference I'm aware, Srila Prabhupada was asked, is there a place for pride in Krishna consciousness? And the answer that Prabhupada gave was, to the best of my memory, one can be proud that one has been accepted by Krishna, I'm part of Krishna's party. Some language like that. Not myself personally, but somehow I become the recipient of Krishna's mercy, and I'm part of that assembly of those who have received Krishna's mercy. But that's a transcendental pride as opposed to the, you know, the one that's very debilitating. Something else? Janmashtami, you had your hand up.
I think it's the Sri Krishna Samhita, Bhajan Thakur, he equates the slaying of different demons.
Yeah.
To the slaying of demons in Vrindavan, Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes, to the eradication of anarthas. And it seems that, kind of what we're going through as sadhakas, you know, anartha nivritti, it's very similar to what Krishna's doing with Pundraka. You know, he's eliminating that consciousness here and there in different ways, but it's ultimately that's what it is, you know, and drawing us closer to him.
Yeah. Three things. Specifically, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta say there's, in his occasional pastimes or nimitta lila in Vrindavan, there's a potency within those pastimes that's specific for worldly people. There's nityalila and nimitta, or occasional, that's his English translation. And so again, there's potency specifically for delivering those who are in the conditioned state to the perfect state, specific to Vrindavan. I'm unaware of any expansion or extension of that principle to his leelas outside of Vrindavan. But it's Krishna helping those of us that are wishing to be in his service, but there's obstacles, and helping us to overcome those obstacles, he performs those pastimes. That is to say, within the pastime, there's a potency. So the performance of the pastime, the hearing of the pastime, the describing of the pastime, there's a potency to help us overcome some obstacles in our path to Krishna. For worldly, not pure devotees, the other pastimes are there, you know, for perfected souls, to enliven them. But in any case, if we were more Krishna conscious than we are presently, there would certainly be some upliftment in seeing whether that tendency is there in me or the tendency is there in the world around me. Then Krishna's protection will always come. I'm safe. Even if it's a dangerous place, I'm safe because Krishna's protection is there. Krishna addresses those things personally. Yogakshema vaham yaham. Something else? Yes? Yeah, sure.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thanks for a nice class. Maharaj, I'm going to put over this question more so like a controversial way so that
fantastic.
I can be able to bring out my point.
Sure, controversy is part of our life, isn't it?
What we find here is that Pundraka has been so convinced in himself and convincing so many of his followers and colleagues that he is actually the supreme. And we understand that also that when one has a desire, that Krishna fulfills that desire. So I'm understanding that Krishna actually fulfills his desire of trying to convince himself that he is Krishna. But then in the end, as what we would find coming up shortly, that Krishna would turn back and kill him to get rid of that whole false identity. So how can we explain this philosophy behind this? That I'm not blaming Krishna, but trying to understand from the different angle that why would such a thing be allowed?
Why was such a...
That to allow Pondraka to get himself in such a position to be so convinced that I am Vasudev.
Well, let's step back from the question and say, why is there material creation? It's just like, 50 giant steps back. Because material creation is a facility for persons to small, medium, or large, which size fits you. False ego. All living entities that take birth in the material world get covered before they even do anything. Before they even get a body to do anything, they're covered with false ego. And so everything they do is filtered through and influenced by false ego, whether it's, this big, medium, or small, whatever the species, whatever the, everything. So why does Krishna do that? Because the living entities, yayatam mam prapadyante, but at the same time, he's kind. The purpose of is not just give them the facility, but the higher purpose to correct that misuse of free will so that the living entity can again come back to the position of ultimate happiness. It's described in the third canto of Bhagavatam very beautifully. That's the meditation of the Supreme Lord before the creation even comes. He just wants them to experience the highest possibility of happiness. It's not happening in the susupti state. It's not happening in the covered by false ego state. But he wants that. But the living entity wants, the false ego influence thing. So he reciprocates in such a way that they can, at least the opportunity is provided, to become free from that. So there's no fault on Krishna's part, which you're not saying that there is, I'm saying there isn't. There's no fault on Krishna's part. It's out of the unlimited numbers of possible ways, it's a way in Pondraka's case specifically, or in our case otherwise, or in creation in general, to return to that position of ultimate happiness. Now, if we were the designer of bringing people to their ultimate happiness, we might very well do it in a different way. But we're imperfect. So accepting that Krishna isn't imperfect, he's doing it that way. He's seeing the desire, giving him the faith, just as he says in Bhagavad Gita about those who worship the demigods, he gives them the faith. Now, that faith may be an obstacle for them taking to devotion to Krishna, but Krishna gives them the faith because that's their desire. He's also giving them some other signal. They just don't have the tuner on, receiver on. They're hearing some other signal. But he's giving the signal. He's sending, knocking on the door, sending messages, pulling the rug out from under them, and doing different things to help them understand that's not the right channel. Go to the Krishna channel. He's merciful. He's all-knowing. And he sends us out on Sankirtan to go chant, and have festivals, and then train and educate those who come forward. There's not enough of all those things, but we do those things to some degree for that purpose. What do you think? Is Krishna kind, or he made a mistake?
Krishna is kind.
Oh, last question. We've got to end because of the wedding. Yes, last question, sure.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, very nice. Earlier you spoke about the scientists and the fundamentalists as being like atheists.
The scientists and?
The fundamentalists, was it?
Or? Impersonalists.
Impersonalists, right. Being like very atheistic. But we have also the so-called religionists.
Yeah.
They're so deep-rooted in the Pali concept too. I mean, In one sense, they're speaking about God, but the other sense, they're so much deep rooted in the bodily concept. They don't believe in the soul and stuff.
Very
so
how this
is detrimental also, because there's a verse that says, I mean, you have like the atheist one side, but then religion is whose past nations as knowledge, you know, propagate nations as knowledge is even worse.
Take the microphone from this devotee. Because he's the kind of wants to say something after I say this something. You want to say something too? On this point, or you want to answer the question? Mataji? I'm just looking at you. You're right in front of the window. I can see the light and then this. So, my answer is a yeah, but. Yes, that's a big obstacle, but not as big as the others. The blind faith in science, Prabhupada said, is the greatest obstacle for him in propagating Krishna consciousness. Blind faith in science. And impersonalism, major obstacle in bringing people to the position of bhakti. Now, the other is an obstacle, but it's not as major as those, because we have experience. People that have some kind of theistic sense but a bodily conception can move into the realm of Bhagavad Gita's message more easily than those two groups. So it may take a little more hand-holding with the group you're mentioning, and by association and prasadam and kirtan and gently moving people to understand they're not their body, they can go, oh, I'm not, okay. Mataji in the back, and Lakshmi, have to honor her. I can't see because of the light. Oh, she's Lakshmi. Okay. She's waving on your behalf. Is that right?
I just have a comment on
the question.
The last question, because I think he was quoting the verse from the Sri Shapanishad.
Yes, he was.
So, but improperly maybe, because I think the verse from the Sri Shapanishad refers to somebody who deliberately misleads people into thinking they're following a religious path, but they're actually not. They're
cheaters.
Yeah, they're cheaters. So they're worse than anybody. But not the religion is not necessarily the worst, but the person who misuses that position of being a spiritual leader and then guides people improperly.
He's smiling. Srila Prabhupada ki.
I said, thanks a lot for your class. I'm indebted to you.